Shalom Aleichem, Chaver. This is the National Council of Young Israel, and we welcome everyone. We welcome Rebbe for conference call number 131. Thank you, Rebbe.
You are so welcome. Let's begin. Question one. Are the Sheva Brachos under the Chuppah Birchos Hodah? Is the Seder HaBrachos Ma'akev? I attended a chast where someone was given the first bracha HaGofen. He said, Shehakal Baruch L'Chvodo. When corrected, he made a HaGofen. The next kibbutz said again, Shehakal Baruch L'Chvodo. Was either bracha Levatola? What should have been done? Well, the Seder is not Ma'akev. The second Shehakal Baruch L'Chvodo was clearly Levatola. Only make it once, not twice. And what should have happened, is when the first person made Shehakal Baruch L'Chvodo, we say, thank you so much, have him sit down. And the very next person should make a Baruch HaGofen instead of Shehakal Baruch L'Chvodo. That's what should have happened. And, these situations do happen frequently because the person who said Shehakal Baruch L'Chvodo, because he could be reading from a bencher where Shehakal Baruch L'Chvodo was first and HaGofen is last. That's a common mistake, but that's how it should be treated if the mistake is made. Two, the children's book fills with color when you wet it, and after a few minutes its color disappears. You do it again. It's Ishab Tovea B'Shabbos, the whole long bunch of pieces of information which I don't know how to access. Bottom line is, it's a minute to aser all types of tzvia, even tzvia she'eino shel kayam klal, which this may be. I can't guarantee it. I wouldn't know how this thing works. My advice is not to do it. Question three. If the gabbai calls up a mispal from maftir on Shabbos and the mispal is holding a psuk of the zimra, let's say a nishmas, what is the best method to proceed? Should he finish quickly till after yishtabach and take the aliyah and read haftorah as normal? Or should someone else take the aliyah? Or can he have the aliyah and someone else read the haftorah with brachas? Okay, let's begin. L'chatchila, the person should never have been called up. Mishnah Berurah Siman Nun Aleph Sivkot Yud Bidi Eved. If you look in Siman Samach Vov Siv Dalet, there's a dispute. The minig according to the Mishnah Berurah there, Sivkot Nchavav, as he does go up. The halacha is he goes up right away because you have to wait around. This guy's in the middle of Nishmas till he finishes the whole Nishmas, till he says Shochanad and Makal Truvos and Yishtabach. It'll take a long time. Atira de Tzibura. Listen, must he finish the perek? Ideally, it depends what the perek is, but to keep people waiting should not be done. I believe the best situation in this mistaken case is as follows. He's already called up. I'm going to guess that he does actually get the aliyah, make the brachas on the aliyah. However, he should minimize it. He shouldn't make a mishaberach. He shouldn't tell his father's name. All kinds of things in the Mishnah Berurah there. In our case, since our clear-cut custom is the same person who gets the aliyah from after says the brachas on the haftorah, so I believe he should do that. However, it seems that someone else reads the haftorah. You know, it happened in my shul, Parshas Noso, for various reasons, a little mistake in the Gabos, and somebody said the brachas, and somebody else read the haftorah, not from a klap, from a regular chumash. So that can be done. In this case of maft, I'd recommend that be done. Question four. If I'm in shul on time for chakras, but the minyan daven's too fast for me to say all the psukah de zimra, should I still follow the order of someone that comes late, or can I start with the chazan and see how far I get? Both options are wrong. What you should do is come early. People in my shul complain Shabbos morning they daven psukah de zimra much too quickly. I respond, that's not a complaint. Come 10 minutes early. It's an easy solution to such a problem. A very easy solution. Now, post facto, b'diavad, I believe, yes, you should skip like someone who comes late. Really, you did come late. You should have come 10 minutes early. On time for you is late. So therefore, that thing would apply. Five, is it okay to make an arrangement with an ice cream store where Shabbos observant customers open a gift card at the store? And the store employee can put a pin on the card to mark how much is owed, thereby allowing the people to, quote, buy ice cream on Shabbos. Oh, that's a big problem. If you look in Siman Shin Chav Gimel Siv Dalet, it says that shame dumim. Any mention, even tangentially, of price is prohibited. Interestingly, in the Mishnah Berurah, Siv Kav Chav, he gives an example. Osen Nekovim puts a pin. A pin. That's exactly what the Mishnah Berurah prohibits, and therefore it should not be done. Six. I know it is generally accepted that it's forbidden to talk and ask Alexa or any other device to do malachas on Shabbos. Is this considered a real malacha or one done through a shinui? The nafka mina would be if we could ask Alexa to turn lights on or off for cholim, or if we could ask a guy to talk to it on our behalf for malacha mitzvah or other allowed reasons. Please discuss the gedurim. Seems to me Alexa is not a shinui at all. I'm told, I don't have one, that today, millions upon millions upon millions of people in the world use Alexa or some other device to have things done on their behalf. I don't think I can be called a shini at all. I don't think so. Nonetheless, it seems to me that if someone is a chola, you still may ask a goy to do it. Why? We can call it a shvus to shvus. I'm assuming that Alexa, whatever Alexa is doing, they put on a light. Lights are usually LED these days. So whatever Alexa is doing, it's likely to be a derabonon and the squish. So a goy, a shvus to shvus, which is mutter b'mokum mitzvah, and that would be okay. That's the only way I can imagine it, because I do not consider it to be a shini at all. Seven, a patio door can only be locked from inside the house and only open from outside if it is unlocked. Should the mezuzah go on the right side leaving the house? What's the logic over here? Since the way the locks are run, the average person to go in from the street through the house to the patio, that's called a panimi. A panimi, an internal room, as we know, there's a whole bunch of rooms, and it's an internal room, so the mezuzah should go on the right side of that most internal room. However, it seems to me that's only true with literally internal. There's no way out. It's a dead end. Here, it's not true. It's open. It can be open from the outside if it's unlocked. And in typical case, it will be unlocked. It may even be unopened. So therefore, I would say it's better to put the mezuzah going from the patio into the house. And therefore, the B is moot. So later change, a new lock is put on the patio door. It can be opened from the outside. The mezuzah needs to be changed. I think it should be there in the first place, because people still can walk in from the, you know, even though it's locked right now, they can, you know, Reuven can go into the house and Shimon can come in from the back after Reuven opens the lock. Question eight. A family has four children. The mother nearly had a nervous breakdown and is currently under treatment for anxiety medication as well as therapy. They are not in any way emotionally ready to have more children now. In addition, three out of the four children have chronic health issues, not life-threatening, but enough that they need to see specialists several times a year. This adds to the stress levels in the home. The wife is still unable to work, and they are living on the income of the husband, making ends meet difficult. The wife has had bad reactions to various birth control pills over the years and does not want to take anything that will change her hormonal balance. Assuming that is indeed correct, that they should not have more children for the foreseeable future, what would be a permissible way to live as husband and wife, avoiding conception? It's a very good question. There are two ways. One is a diaphragm. A diaphragm is a reliable birth control method if it's used properly. They typically it's used together with spermicides. There's another variant called a sponge, which has the spermicides built in. It has to be put in properly, otherwise it's not going to work. But if it's put in properly, it always works. That's permissible. And then the old-fashioned IUDs, which are not hormonal. These days, most IUDs in Almirena are hormonal, but they don't want hormones. The old-fashioned IUDs are also permissible. Question 9. There's a man who was always conservadox, whose children are now frum and learning in yeshivas. He started davening in a frum shul. A few years ago, he got remarried to a woman who had a conservative conversion. As far as I know, he is Shomer Shabbos and Kashrus, although his wife has never come to shul. I found out recently that he left the neighborhood shul because it would not give him any kibbutzim. What are the halachic hashkafic considerations regarding giving this halias and other kibbutzim? That's a very tough question. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah Siman Kuflam and Ches Tzidkot and Hay, it says something remarkable. Someone who's choshed on arayas, don't give him an aliyah, talks about arayas. Can you imagine that? Don't. It's going to be an embarrassment. Don't give it to him. You get the impression, any other aliyah, even as choshed on arayas, he can receive. Interesting, the Prima Gadim, in Siman Reish Pei Beis, Esh Lavram Sivkot and Zion, says no. If he's rugil, if he's continually violating a particular prohibition, they shouldn't call him up at all. They shouldn't call him. That's what the Pisgei Tshuvas quotes in Kuf Lamed Vav Heora 10. But there he says something very remarkable, which I think is very, very important. It all depends on the nature of the sinner and the nature of the community, which means that the shul, the other shul, were not able to handle the fact that he's living with a woman, married to a woman, who arguably is not Jewish in the first place. Therefore, it's in effect an intermarriage, and we have to discourage intermarriage, so we cannot give him any kibbutzim whatsoever. So he left the shul, never left the shul. Okay, I feel bad for him. But that would be the attitude that was presumably being exhibited in that community. In the community of the rabbi who's asking the question, maybe the dynamic is different. Maybe they can handle the situation. Maybe they can handle it on the grounds that, listen, it's not an intermarriage. I mean, at least from his perspective, it's 100% kosher marriage because he's conservadox and he thinks that a conservative conversion is good, and therefore there's no problem with the marriage whatsoever. He may be wrong, but he's not a bum. He's just ignorant. He's relying on the conservative conversion. He's a shogeg, basically. Assuming he knows that, you know, someone said, well, he should have asked a different rabbi. Not everybody is savvy enough or wise enough to ask a different rabbi than the first person whom we asked in the first place, who said that perhaps it's a good conversion. And therefore, I would say, if you ask me, if you could give him an aliyah in my shul, and I explain to people, if they ask me, listen, I'm not going to count it for a minion, because I'm afraid maybe it is a problem. And therefore, if you don't count intermarried couples, you shouldn't count them either. If you count intermarried couples, you certainly qualify. But I'm not sure of the status over here. We don't know. If we don't know, my Rebbe said that some, not many, but some conservative conversions might be effective. But Moshe, not that way. But my Rebbe said maybe once in a while it's good. So we don't know exactly what's happening over here. He doesn't know whether it's permissible or prohibited, this relationship. He doesn't know. So therefore, in my shul, I think we can give it to this person an aliyah. Other shuls might give blatantly intermarried people an aliyah. I would not do that. And yet other shuls would say even this fellow can't get an aliyah. That's in the other neighborhood shul because they're afraid it's an intermarriage. So we outlined three different opinions on this sensitive matter. 10. Over 20 years ago, a woman received a psak from a well-respected Orthodox Talmud Chacham that her children, who were conceived through a donor, non-Jew egg, would not need conversion. She carried the children. Years later, it seems that the common practice is to perform a Giyur L'Chumrah on such children. In that case, would the daughters be permitted to marry Kohanim? Could they claim that they are permitted to a Kohen based on the Psak their mother received? May the Masad HaKiddushin honor their approach and perform such a wedding. In my opinion, the answer is no, no, and no. It's not just a Chumrah. It seems to me that the prevailing opinion, quoting the name of Rabbi Yashiv and many others, is that we follow the genetic mother, and the womb is merely an incubator, as Rabbi Yashiv put it. I was told by someone, main Rabbi Sherman, who heard it from his mouth, that that's what we held. Rabbi Shlomo Amar Shlita, the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim and formerly chief rabbi of Israel, came to our yeshiva with a very strong argument. This is, in his mind, absolutely true. He can't even argue with this position. Now, I'm not so doctrinaire. I think you can argue. I think Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi Amar are correct. But nonetheless, in my community, if we had a situation which was reversed, where there is a Jewish egg and a surrogate, which happens, some women just can't carry, but they have eggs. So I think, based on Rabbi Amar, that the child, that child is certainly Jewish, and he paskin in our yeshiva, if it's a girl, she can marry a kohen. I would send him to such a person, Rabbi Amar, to write a letter to that effect. And in Riverdale, we would do a gear lechumra in that situation, just in case the other poskim are right. That depends upon the birth mother. In the case of a surrogate, a non-Jewish surrogate, it would be a problem. But I think that, strictly speaking, the more likely opinion is that of Rabbi Yashiv, as that's reported by Rabbi Sherman. I thought that that's the more correct opinion. And therefore, this donor egg person probably has to have a real conversion. Not, we call everything Giyur L'Chumra. Giyur L'Chumra became a fascinating term. It doesn't say that the Giyur is 95% good and 5% not good. It's a Giyur L'Chumra. Or Faket. It's 5% good and 95% no, but we still call it a Giyur L'Chumra. But that's completely different in terms of how we approach them going forward. Okay. 11. My son is 8 years old and is often not up late enough to count Sfira with a bracha each night. But on certain nights, for example during Pesach or on Shabbos, he will be awake to count. Can I teach him to count with a bracha even though he will almost certainly not count all the nights? He will likely remember to count during the daytime, but as there are days without school, etc., as possible, he'll miss a full day. Or is it bad chinuch, as the bracha might be a levatola? This is a good chinuch question. I believe that the child should be taught to say Sfira whenever possible, and not everyone agrees. It's a bracha levatola. As a matter of fact, it's a story about the Beis HaLevi, the famous seven kulas, printed in by the Baruch Epstein, in his biography, autobiography. Why are you so machal? They asked the Brisker Rav. Oh, I have seven kulas. One of them was, if you miss their sphere, you can count straight anyway. We don't worry about al-chumrah. So if the person does that, it's not terrible. We don't do that, of course, la-halakha. But it's only a matter of chinuch. I think it's much important, and if you ask me, it's more important than the chinuch calculus to have the individual child say Sfira, even if he's going to miss a day and then continue counting, rather than to skip Sfira completely at that young age. 12. Does the heter of putting a raw piece of meat to cook right before Shabbos, called Kedera Chaisa, still apply today? Or do we say that since our appliance is cooked much faster, it is no longer applies? I would say it no longer applies, and many other rabbonim have said that as well. 13. Discuss guidelines and security protocols in shuls, including Shabbos issues of radio phones, signals on doors, cameras/monitors with or without recording, etc. Okay. So now, one has to be so careful over here not to allow frivolous and unnecessary Chilul Shabbos, which could lead to what the Chazon Ish called Bittul Shabbos. You're knocking the whole thing out. Don't be so technical. You could have done it. You have to be more attuned to the spirit, to the general deportment that we have on Shabbos. That's a very, very, very important consideration, which should be kept in mind whenever these things happen. So I believe that radios and phones is a disaster. Radios and phones is the opposite of the spirit of Shabbos, especially phones. radios, not as bad. Phones, the average person today on his or her phone has the whole world. Bank deposits, stock purchases, you name it. It can all be done from a phone. So how can you say that a phone is just a simple device to answer a phone call in a crisis? It's used for so many other things. I don't see how I can finally have a head to do this. I don't think it's really pikuach nefesh in almost all cases. It's a bittul Shabbos, as I mentioned before, so I don't believe. I would say that there's a problem. Radios and phones should really not be in shul. I know there are organizations that have radios and phones. I don't support those organizations. If there's an important security consideration, as many shuls have embraced since the disasters of 4 years ago. So we have a hired guard in front of our shul, a non-Jewish guard. He stands in front. Oh, but he needs someone from the shul to recognize the people. He's been there for 4 years. He recognizes the people. He knows how to report to us if something is prepared. In the offing, he listens to the radio to hear the latest reports. That's what a Shabbos goy, quote-unquote, is for, to provide security. I'm not a fan of the people walking around from Jews with these radios and telephones on Shabbos. I think it should be discouraged. Now, Hatzalah is a different story. Hatzalah is not security protocol. Hatzalah is a need to imply, to respond on the spot. No time to dilly-dally. Every second counts. So then, in those cases, for many, many, many years, I'm the rabbi of Hatzalah, I said you cannot have cell phones. No. Better a walkie-talkie. Radio, because that's only used for this. Cell phones, you buy stocks on your bank accounts, you do everything in stock on a cell phone. It's just not Shabbatic at all. Well, they told me more recently that the other systems don't work as quickly as cell phones. So I had to relent, because every minute of Pikuach Nefesh counts. But I would say that that's only to be used in an emergency situation. You should try to find out in advance what is an emergency and how it comes up on your cell phone. But for a person prancing in front of the shul security, I don't believe it. It's a hetzer. You have a security problem, hire a guy. That's my opinion on this matter. Now, that's as far as radios and phones. Signals on doors, I'm not exactly sure what signals on doors mean, but it may mean when you open certain doors, you hear a noise or you see a light on and off. That's what it means. To me, the chatchila should be disconnected before Shabbos. But the evidence, okay, we call that a psik resha, the lo nichle by the rabbonim. You don't want to be seen on the camera. You want the God of to be caught on the camera, not you. And therefore, it seems to me it's lo nichle. And so the rabbonim, we're assuming. And therefore, another also assuming that psik resha, lo nichle by the rabbonim is mutter. Rabbi Vad, Rabbi Moshe Pasen, that way, not everyone agrees. There's room to be makel on these types of signals on doors, if that's the pshat, what the words mean. You walk into a shul, you hear click, 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 or you see the red light, green light, but nothing happens because they shut off the connection to the box to call the police. That's a psikresh lo nichle by the rabbonim, in my opinion, which would be permissible according to the gedolim I mentioned a minute ago. Cameras matters with or without recording. Once again, the minig is to be more lenient with respect to cameras and monitors with or without recording. Like it's talking about the Rabbanan. Once again, it's Reshlo Nichola. You want to catch the Ganav on the recording, not yourself. So I thought there should be room to be lenient, if necessary. Obviously, if necessary. These days, everything seems to be necessary. The only shuls have camera all over the place and records here and there. You know, if you're able to make sure there's no cameras in your own shul's device, keep it as a cyberspace, which can be retrieved later on, that is better. Not perfect, but it's certainly better. Every case, of course, has certain nuances, and the local rub should be on top of it. Okay. 14. If one received a cash gift from his parents, must he separate Maisik Suffer from it? Does it make a difference if they specify what they designated it for? B. may one use his master money to support his daughter and son-in-law who's living in Kolos. Does it depend on if he's already committed to support them? May one use his master money to pay for his grandchildren's tuition and help his children who are struggling. Okay. So, cash gifts from parents. Different opinions exist. Some say, my success is only from your income. Your income means you make money from your parnasa, not you get a gift. That's just a gift, not like regular income. Some are more machmir when it comes to gifts. Now, if they designate it specific for A, B, or C, it's hard to go against their wishes. They want it all to go to help your child's tuition bill. It's a $10,000 bill. You'll say, I gave $1,000 to sucker. And they come after the tuition committee. Oh, I gave $9,000. What do you want? And I gave it to people to take care of going forward. Listen, all this stuff is problematic. It's problematic. It seems to me that if they designate it for tuition, so you should give it all to tuition. And don't take Meiser from it. He says, for you, again, if you need every penny, you're putter for Meiser in any event. Now, B and C, a little bit more complicated, is the whole machlokes is Meiser suffer only for people who are starving or for all general causes. All general causes. In our case, referring to close relatives, either a son-in-law is learning in Kollel or grandchildren studying in yeshivas and need extra money for tuition. So according to many authorities, this is a permissible way of using your Meiser money. Many poskim say that if it's an obligation upon you, davar shebechova, and above men ha'maisa, it's not technical obligations. For better or worse, no school is going to insist that the tuition be paid by the grandparents. They write a letter, please help us, that they will do, but they're not going to say that. Same with as far as the kollel. Kollel is very important for this fellow, and we should try to support it. If there's no alternative but to pay through the Meiser Kesefim fund, which a person should have, you should have a separate fund, then it may be done. Number 15. Is it permissible to sing songs with lyrics from Shir HaShirim or elsewhere in the Tanakh? The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. Oh boy. A very serious problem of Shir HaShirim. What's the problem? The problem, as I understand it, is that people associate Shir HaShirim with a particular young man and young woman, whereas we know it's all a mashal, but Hashem and Klal Yisrael, we should not be singing songs that are basically love songs, romantic songs from Shir HaShirim. It's not allowed, because it's not the pshat and the psukim. The person should not be singing those songs. As one said, a wedding, and Rav Soloveitchik, the Tzal, was standing next to me, and the Chosn, a distinguished Talmud Chacham, was walking down the aisle, and the Chazan is intoning, I believe the song was, Dodi Li Vahani Lo Haroe Pasho Shanim, and the Rav is muttering under his breath, Isor Gomor Midina de Gemara. I believe he understood the Gemara and Sanhedrin the way I just explained it to you, Sukkim from Shir HaShirim should not be associated with Reuven and Sarah. I still remember once a wedding invitation. The front page it said on the invitation, Mayim Rabim Lo Yuchlu Lechapot Et Ahava Unharot Lo Yishtafuha. Sadly, the couple got divorced. So you should not be discussing about how love cannot be put out. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love to Klal Yisrael, not Reuven and Sarah. So therefore, I think it should not be sung. Elsewhere in Tanakh, I think the Minhag Yisrael is to be lenient. And they understand the Gemara to refer to Shir HaShirim exclusively about these love, kind of love songs. But other Sfarim from Tanakh, who doesn't sing from Tanakh? Or Zaruah Latzadik, Uli Shalem Simcha, everyone sings that. Sukkim of Tanakh. But Rabbeinu Rav Shech, the Shalita, as a strict view, he wouldn't even sing Or Zeru Al HaTzadik because he's Tillim, and he interprets the Gemara that way. But the Minig HaOlam is certainly to be lenient to sing those kinds of songs. They have Tzveikus and a good tune to them and a good purpose to them. Minig HaOlam is to be Mekel, except Shir HaShirim. We can sing Shir HaShirim, oh, that's okay. The beautiful tunes of Shir HaShirim. But the intention of the person singing it is Hashem and Klal Yisrael. Beautiful songs that we have. The Dveikus has a cold old the Hinez Abom or the Leg Al-Horim. Right? Hashmi is Kolech. They're beautiful songs. When you sing them, you have to relate to Hashem and Klal Yisrael. Then I think it would be okay. Okay, that's my understanding of the Gemara Sanhedrin Kuf Aleph. 16. The mitzvah boys, Bo Bayom was on Friday. The family wants to make the suda on Thursday night, but do not want it to end too late. They want to start before nightfall, and yet still allow the bar mitzvah boy to do the late benching. What's the best way to do this? I had this last Thursday. I was at a bar mitzvah sitting next to the bacha. I asked him, what is your birthday? As I suspected, it was Friday. I think it was the 20th day of Sivan. Friday. He said, do me a favor. I told this young man, his name is Binyamin. After the stars come out, after it's dark, an hour after it's dark, 9:30, have a kezias of challah. This way you can bench for sure. Otherwise, it would be a little problematic. So that's how it's this problem is handled. It's a fairly easy solution. It's kind of a case. There's some more complex situations that arise these days where you have early Shabbos, as we call it. In my case, it's exactly this case. It was a Thursday night, and probably almost Friday. But more common problems, you want to make early Shabbos, and Bo Bayom is Shabbos. Now what do you do? So I had this question recently. I said, you know what you have to do? You want to make early Shabbos, that's fine. Find someone else in the building who davens late, and in the middle of the meal, the neighbor should call your son, call him into the house and make kiddush for him after it gets dark. This way, he fulfills the kiddush midoraita after 10 to go chavim by the next door neighbor, because the kiddush he makes in the first part of the meal, which is before 10 to go chavim, is not by mitzvah yet. So that's complicated. All right, let's go on. Number 17. If one sees the sky light up, but does not the actual bolt of lightning, then here's thunder. What bracha or brachos should he say? So on thunder we say Shekochu Gevurasa Moliola. Now what about lightning? So Piskei Shuvos, Siman Reish Chav Zion, footnote 13, quotes contemporary Gedolim, will think it's okay, even if you don't see the bolt. Quotes of Shlomo Zalman said this, Tzitz Eliezer, Binyamin Zilba all say that. But sadly, I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's right. I would not make a bracha. I would say something bracha slahakel. Because I thought you have to see the actual bolt. So I'm not sure I'm right. But I thought it's at least a suffix. So the person can do what they want. There are three gedolei olam mamish. They can rely on their psak. But if you ask me, I would say better not to make a bracha. Because it's suffix brachos lehakel. 18. If someone who was diagnosed with underwent chemo and is in remission, should we add his name? Should we add his name in the public mishaberach? What about adding his name to the private shmonesri or refrainu? If someone is in hospice care, should we still daven for refuah shleima? This is a serious problem. Serious problem. Serious problem. You know, the idea of public mishaberach in my shul stopped, I say by now, decades ago. Decades ago. People were abusing the privilege. Come with a list of 20 names and the whole team was sitting there, a bunch of idiots. So we have a new system. I think it's more than 20 years old already. We pause at the mishaberach, And the Gabbai, before he starts, says, there'll be a pause. You're going to insert your name quietly at your own seat. And that's what we do. And after X number of seconds, that the Gabbai feels appropriate, he just starts going. The other guy has 20 more names to mention. That's a big deal. He can do what he wants. But the public, you have to worry about Tircha, the Tzibura. Very, very important. So the Pug Mishaver seems to me, if you ask me, shouldn't exist. These days, it's abused to the point that there's terrible, terrible Tircha de Tzibura. But again, if in a shul they have it, so I would say if he's in remission, he should not put his name in the public Mishaberach. Of course, your private Shemar Esrei, there's nothing wrong with that. I asked somebody, why I take it so long to daven Shemar Esrei? Oh, you don't know how many cholim I have in my list. It's expensive cholim. I also have cholim in my list. It takes you half an hour just to say the cholim. So you have to be careful not to overburden yourself either. But it's your issue. It's your issue. Hospice care. Now, it depends. Not all hospice care is alike. I was had a phone call just this morning, but some individuals in hospice care, and he's still hoping he'll be able to get out and go home. It's a very remote chance. Then, if there's a remote chance, you're going to dive for the Refuah Shleima. If the doctor said there's no chance, you're not supposed to pray for a miracle. Question number 19. When does one say Tfilas HaDerech when traveling from Queens to Brooklyn or to Muncie, the Catskills, the Poconos, Lakewood? When going on a trip that requires a Tfilas HaDerech, may one say at the beginning so that they fall asleep the rest of the time? C, is it preferable for one person on a bus containing a class trip to say it for everyone, for everyone to say it themselves? D, if one person says it, may he say it over the microphone? Oh boy. Complicated question. So, the Gemara sounds like it's saying that you have to be a full parsa away from the society, from civilization. A full parsa. Now, I looked in the Dirshu. That's an important topic. The Dirshu Mishnah Brura, where it says something quite remarkable. It says, I thought it's on my own, but it's printed there as well, I think from Shlomo Zalman, that they asked him, from B'nai Brak to Yerushalayim, Tel Aviv, to Yerushalayim, do you make a bracha? He said, no. Why not? Two reasons he gave. One reason, I thought it was a more compelling reason, you never left the area, he says, everywhere you go, wherever you go on that entire road, there's always going to be someone on either side of you less than a parsa away. The highways, yeah, the highways, but less than a parsa away, a parsa is 4 mil. A mil is approximately a kilometer. Approximately. So 4 kilometers, that's 2.5 miles. The road, there's no place on that road. If you go 2.5 miles in any direction, you will not bump into some kind of issue. That's what Shlomo Zalman seems to have said, which is, of course, a very, very important psak. And he also has a second reason. There are cars on the road the whole time. There are always cars there. What are you afraid about? Chayas, Ross, and Lissam, but there are cars everywhere. It's not going to happen. Others say the other way around. After what Tfilas HaDerech because of car accidents. It's more dangerous than the old days. That may be true, but statistically, we assume it's safe, otherwise you wouldn't be driving at all. And the poskim say that one cannot make such a bracha based upon your own perception. Now, I still remember that I once was privileged to get a car ride with the two great Rosh Yeshivas of Har Etzion, Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik and Levracha. And Rav Amital said, you know, this is before the tunnels. We're going here, it's dangerous. I make a Tfilas HaDerech every single day. Okay, then why did he do it? Because he had a job at the Rosh Yeshiva. But it was dangerous in those days to go through those areas, the Heitzu, various barbed wire fences holding in quote-unquote refugees. Anyway, He did it on a daily basis. But you go on all these trips, Muncie, Catskills, Poconos, they're not dangerous. And therefore, if you can, there's always going to be something within 2.5 miles, it seems to me that a bracha should not be said. Now, it seems to me that Queens to Brooklyn or Brooklyn to Muncie, as far as I know, there's always something within 2.5 miles. Catskills, I don't think so. Poconos, I don't think so. Lakewood, I think there is. So what do you do when you have the Catskills or the Poconos? What I do, when I remember, is I say that the Tefillas HaDerech, I go up from my house up to Route 17. There seems to be houses everywhere. Once you get a little bit past, a few miles past Monroe, where it's a big Yishuv Kiryas Yo, and up there, I haven't seen anything on the side. I don't see any cities. One house on the prairie, I don't know if that counts as Yishuv. So I would try to say Tefillas HaDerech when you get past Monroe. That's on the way to Camp Morasha as they go every year. Back from Camp Morasha, so they pass the La Vie Road, which is a mile on down towards the way I go, I say Tefillas HaDerech. The other way, Rabbi Sif Shlit, the winner of Mahapa Kabbalah, he would stop the car at the end of 247 before the right turn towards Hancock, stop the car, make a Tefillas HaDerech there. Okay? That was his custom. Now, you can't say at the beginning, because you're supposed to not say Tefillas HaDerech, Simen Kuf Yud, Siv Zayin, until you're Hechzik Baderech, until you are on your way. If you're not on your way yet, then you should not be making the Tefillas HaDerech. Just don't do it at the very beginning. Wait till you go on your way. Now, can one person say it? The Eish Lebron Buchach says yes. They quote Reb Chaim Kanievsky and Rabbi Vosna saying the Chatzchila, no. They give Tefillas HaDerech instead of a Tefila, not Tamei Bracha. Tefila, we the Chatzchila don't rely on Shemei Kona. So I think the Minhag Yisrael is to be lenient in this matter. However, when it comes to microphones, I'm not happy. Because the microphone is not your natural voice. It's an electronic voice. Rav Shlomo Zalman was very upset about it. It's being used at weddings and other such occasions. So I think we should do without it. Question number 20. When is a putty potty to just change clothes after white water rafting? Is one required to wash his hands with water 3 times? And when washing his hands with bread in a regular bathroom, is one allowed to say the Yasha Yasser after he's in the bathroom with the door still ajar? Must be careful that it be totally closed. All good questions. What's the status of, I'm not sure what the word potty potty means, what's the status of our bathrooms? So it's like some kind of our bathroom. It may be worse. I don't know. There are 2 reasons why our bathrooms may not be bathrooms. Number one, like Bate Kisei, the Parsoi, they had whatever came out of the person's body would start up near and ended up falling down to the bottom. And therefore, it's not considered Bate Kisei. Our situation is somewhat different. It goes into a toilet, and that makes it worse because it just stands there. On the other hand, it's better because you press the flusher, it goes all the way down to the sewer so far away. So that's reason number one to possibly matter our bathrooms. Chazanish suggested that. And another reason is our bathrooms are not bathrooms. The word bathroom is a misnomer. It really means, when I say a toilet room, in Eretz Yisrael they have the FSFS. It's just a toilet. That's a real Beis HaKisei, really the house of a seat. We know what the seat is for. That would be a potential problem. However, today, it's a room. People brush their teeth, they shave, they hang laundry, they do all kinds of other things in the area near the bathroom, and therefore, a second reason why it may not be halachic status of the Beis HaKisei. So I would say that you should try to wash for bread elsewhere. There's no alternative you can use it. To wash, for Ashiyot, that you can wash in the bathroom, if you ask me. It's hard to look for another place all the time. But of course, you don't say the Ashiyot are in the bathroom. You go out. What if the door is ajar to turn the other way? You should have to face that way. The post can say you should cover it with something. Can't go into all the complex details of that. 21. Can one use biofreeze on Shabbos? What does it mean? Never heard of it. Cream version and a spray version. I assume the cream version must not be permitted. However, the spray version is when my cast is more in play. Biofreeze is used for muscle joint pain. Biofreeze does not heal the injury, but it just numbs the area where it's applied for a few hours, causing it to stop the pain for the duration of the treatment. The issue here, of course, is refuah. So if one person is in the status that he cannot function normally, can't function normally, he's so distressed by this pain, we consider that to be a chole she'ein bo sakona. That's presumably the definition of chole she'ein bo sakona. And therefore, a person reaches that level, he's allowed to take medicines. It's not a problem. Not a problem. Now, if you can't function normally, or you may not be able to function normally, then I believe it's permissible to take these medicines I said a minute ago. If you have a status of chole she'ein bo sakona, we paskin, not everyone agrees, we paskin medicine, it would be permissible. Okay. Again, if it's a cream version, it's a yisim memachek. Spray version is no memachek, as far as I know, and it's permissible for the pain. They call the shame of sakon if the pain is so intense. Every case, again, the specifics are different in every case. 22. On Shabbos, can a housekeeper turn on a Roomba, robotic automatic vacuum, to clean your house? They are very quiet. What was an alternative mutter option, like a Roomba, so that the housekeeper is doing this without your instruction, just to make it easier for herself? Would a regular vacuum cleaner be permitted for her in this situation? Well, it's a little bit complicated. The Mishnah Brura talks along these lines. You know, instructions can be ambiguous. I tell you to do something, and I'm going to tell you how to do it. If the other option is viable and can actually be done, there's much more room to be lenient. Regular vacuum, if it makes a lot of noise, we should try to avoid it, even though they could have used a broom. But it's very quiet, and they could have used a heter method to achieve basically the same result. Then there's room to be more lenient. 23. On Shabbos, you're going to allow to do sit-ups, push-ups, pull-ups, or similar types of light exercise. B, it's permitted to stretch out one's body before a long walk to shul across town for a bar mitzvah. Good questions. Look at Mishnah Brura, Simon Shin, Aleph, and Cotton Zion. It was obviously for medical reasons, it's prohibited if you're not a Chol HaShem B'Sakana. Shulchan Aruch says so in Simon Shin, Chof Ches, Sif, Membeis. If you're Chol HaShem B'Sakana, then of course, we're matter these things, but who says you are? A healthy person has issues if it's Nikol Refuah. If you look in the Mishnah Brura Shin Chav Ches Sifkon Kuf Lamed, therefore it really should not be done, these things. Should not be done. Before a long walk, for a short amount of time, it's not obvious it's for Refuah purposes, you're stretching your legs. It's not a Refuah. So it'll be permissible, even though you have an intention of stretching of a refuah, because it's not obvious that it's refuah, it's okay. It has to be obvious refuah. Okay. Question 24. Should a bracha be recited when reading Megillas Eicha as well as Megillas Rus, Kolelas, and Shir HaShirim from the Klaf? Depending on our shul and most shuls, we don't read it from a Klaf. If somebody wants to read it from a Klaf, we would not allow a bracha. That's our minig. Those who have the Vilna Gaon, he insisted on a Klaf, and I think he even gave a bracha to the person reads from the class. That's a very legitimate minhag, but I don't think it applies in most houses that we know about. Okay, what bracha? Amikra Megillah and Shechiyah. Question 25. Can a hearing aid be adjusted on Shabbos? B, can the batteries of a hearing aid be changed on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. Well, take the first thing first. Adjusting. This is the famous letter that Shlomo Zalman wrote to the Chazon Ish when he's a very young man in his 20s, and his mother was losing a hearing, and he gave his heter in some cases to do it. His reason was, you're not creating or destroying any circuits, you're just adding a little bit more current goes through if it has to be a little bit louder. He doesn't think that's a prohibition whatsoever. You want to do a Bashino, it's even better. But in his Chazon Ish seemed to have rejected his reasoning. Those are the famous two letters Shlomo Zalman, the young man, wrote to the Chazon Ish. His letters were also printed more recently, until I only had the Chazon Ish's letters. Bottom line, it seems there's room to be made with Shas HaTzchak, and hearing it is almost always Shas HaTzchak. Now, charging it on Shabbos and Yom Tov is only if it's absolutely required. Torah Gadol, and even then, do it b'shinui. Or b'shinui, instead of holding the battery with your hands like normally between your thumb and your first two fingers, hold it backwards or something like that. It's backwards is considered to be a shinui. Last question. Hashkafas are reliable in Israel. I don't live in Israel. I believe you should ask someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael. I'm told that the OU has an office in Eretz Yisrael. Call that number. They'll tell you a rabbi to speak to. They'll give you his number. We try to rely upon the organization that we rely upon here in this country to rely upon there as well. Thank you very much.
Rebbe, we thank you very much. And Bezrat Hashem, we will continue one more week. Next Wednesday will be our 132nd session, and then we'll take a summer break. Thank you, everyone, for being on. See you next week. Take care.
Bye-bye.